Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. The star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
Welcome, everyone. I know I do my podcast every week, and it's been going on, 6.5 years.
No way.
Yes, 6.5 years. And I have been dying to have this person on. Now, let me just do an intro, and then I don't even know what to tell you, except, you know, there's certain people you meet in your life through your work that are incomparable to, and like they're the love. I feel deep love for this person and admiration and respect. I'm not kidding. Like deepness, even though I wasn't invited to her wedding, but
I didn't know you then.
Oh my gosh, shut up. You're such an asshole. Anyway, the point is that I waited to have her on, and I had been asked, and people kept asking, and because I did all my podcasts live, and I thought, oh, I can't do, you know, I want to set aside time and be with her and do this, but she lives in California, and then the fucking pandemic hit, and then I was like, you know what, she's going to be the first person I do live when I come back, and now all my podcasts are on Zoom, so I was like, you know what, fuck it, you know. I have been looking forward to this for, I can't even tell you how long. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, I don't give intros like this, as you know, the one and the only one who will ever be like her because she's such a fucking original. One of the greatest people I have ever met through work. Wendy Liebman is here.
Make me cry. I'm going to cry.
Why? I love you so much. Like,
it's mutual. You're like,
I know, but I've been through
another mother.
You are. I've been through many stages of your life with you.
Yes.
We don't talk. That we go through periods where we talk all the time and then we don't talk. It's one of those deep, deep bonding soul sister. I just love you.
I knew you before you were gay.
Okay. I was gay. You mean out before I was out.
Well, before I knew you were gay.
Right. You know, I tried to keep it a little bit of a secret.
I tried to match you up with tall men.
Did you did? Who did you try to match me up with?
I wasn't even friends with him, but I worked with Brad Garrett once and I suggested it.
I fucking love Brad Garrett.
I know.
He's and hilarious. He's so handsome. Isn't
and
he?
He's tall enough for you.
I know, but that was always it. Like being
What's
a tall
the fucking bell thing. What's the bell?
A Jew. Anything Jewish is, as you know, Wendy has never listened to my podcast, so she doesn't know that I have a Jew bell. And anything that's remotely Jewish gets a ring. And people are complaining about it. So
that it's too...
That's annoying, but it's like, it's not... A lot of people love it because they're Jews. And, but I do it because, you know, there's so much anti-Semitism. And we need to know how much we've contributed to the world. And that we're all connected. And it's also an homage to my mother who would always be like, I don't know if your parents did this when you were watching TV, but it was basically, you know, we'd be watching TV and someone would come on, Jew, non-Jew, anti-Semite, married a Jew, converted. That was like every person, every time someone came on, that was, did you have that?
Name only.
Yeah. Did you have that in your house or no?
No, we grew up. Like, I'm not a good Jew, Judy. Like,
you are a good Jew because
no, I just took down my Christmas lights.
I gotta go. I have another appointment.
I wasn't bat mitzvahed. I wanted to be because I wanted the stage time.
Right. I will say that my bat mitzvah was my first real performance. You know, solo.
Right. Like all my friends wanted to do it for the money. Do it for
to
the
get talent. Stage time. Yeah.
I know. I went to a lot of bar and bat mitzvahs and I perform at a lot of Jewish functions now.
Right.
So I feel like I have my PhD.
You know, you can't, people think you're only a good Jew if you practice Judaism, but practicing Judaism doesn't just mean being kosher or going to synagogue. It means healing the world, social justice. You make people laugh. You're a total Jew. And listen to your voice. Anyway, so Wendy Liebman, we're going to start at the very beginning.
Long Island, a Jew from Long Island.
Roslyn, Long Island, an older sister, Debbie.
She's a therapist.
Who's a therapist. And Debbie had a best friend, Emily. And the three of you, oh, I know, people freak out when they do my podcast. I do like all this research. Okay. And the three of you, your sister would let you hang out with her and Emily because
I have pictures. I just
let me
have
see.
Pictures. There.
I can't.
It's me and Debbie.
Wow. This is great for a podcast that you can't see on
lemonade Zoom. Stand.
That was your lemonade stand.
But here's Emily in the middle. That's Emily in the middle.
Can oh, she was that? Tall.
Yes. She still is.
Look at you, so fucking cute.
I know.
Look how cute you are. You have the same fucking face. Okay.
I know. Okay. That's enough pictures.
All right. Now, so you and Debbie and now, like, my sister, of course, and my brother wanted nothing to fucking do with me. So you're lucky. Also, your parents are very active, smart, spry. Your father, doctor?
He was in the insurance business.
Okay. Why did I think he was a doctor?
Because a lot of Jews from Long Island.
Yeah. So he was in the insurance business. And your mother?
She ran a nursery school for 20 years. But they I just talked to them and they wanted me to say hello because they love you.
I love them.
They've seen you many times at the Y. They saw you interviewing Phil Rosenthal.
I love them.
And can I just tell you, I just called my dad because it was Father's Day yesterday.
Yes.
No, I posted stuff on Facebook. I forgot to call him and I can't even forgive myself. I feel terrible.
Okay. Here's the deal. I missed my father's last Father's Day for a gig. Okay. And then he dropped dead. So shut the fuck up.
Okay. Will you call my dad and tell him I'm sorry?
Yes, I'll call him. I'd love, see, you're a total Jew with the guilt. Okay.
I know. Even though I sent him a gift.
Right. He doesn't care. It's a fucking fake day. And my kids, it's not a big holiday in my house, you know, because my kids were raised by Leslies. Anyway, even though Henry does say Happy Father's Day to me all the time. Okay. So.
Do they know their fathers?
Okay. They're sperm donors.
Do they
know
them?
Don't you think father, the word father, no, it's anonymous, but don't you think the word father is more of a, like you have a responsibility? I mean, I know women who have, you know, the kids have fathers and they're deadbeat dads and they just call them the sperm donor, you know, like, but ours is really a sperm donor, like two anonymous sperm donors. And we have no idea who the fuck they are anyway, but apparently they're very good looking because my kids are both good looking. Okay.
Is that part of the process? You have to go through pictures and you go.
When I did it, it was so long ago, they didn't have photos. Now they have photos. You can match baby pictures. You can, yeah. I did it by health. Well, I did the Jew catalog. And I did it by, you know, good health and smart and no, not a lot of mental illness or like, you know, you're going to die when you're 25.
Good genes.
Yeah, good genes. So your sister Debbie and you and Emily would perform in your basement. You did Rumpelstiltskin.
That was that picture.
That was the picture?
I was Rumpelstiltskin.
And your sister was always nice to you? Oh, I just fucking, you're so cute. She wasn't always nice to you.
She was cool. And I just wanted her to like me.
Right. Two years older, right?
2 years. So I just wanted to be cool because I wanted her to like me. So she taught me how to smoke cigarettes. And then late at night, if I was good, if I brought her snacks, she would give me the butt of her cigarette. I could smoke the last strap. So yeah, she was nice to me. And she was so cool. And now she's like the warmest person I know. So
the warmest person?
Yeah, she's so sweet and she'll listen.
You know what's amazing? My sister, who, you know, very contentious relationship with, but one time my mother was, I think she was going through menopause and she didn't smoke, but she had like loose cigarettes around. Like, remember those Eve cigarettes? And they had like, it was like painted, had little flowers on it and everything. I don't know if she got them at bar mitzvahs or bat mitzvahs. I don't know where the fuck she got them. And they would be on the shelf. And one time my sister's like, Judith, and she was 4 years older than me, is still 4 years older than me, go steal a cigarette and meet me upstairs in the bathroom. So I go steal a cigarette and I meet her upstairs in the bathroom and we light it and we're puffing it. And then she's like, all right, we're done. You know, cause they all, my brother, sister, if they engaged with me in anything, they decided when it started and when it stopped. I had no say in anything. So I was the youngest. So she's like, all right, put it out now. And I was like, okay, do not tell mommy. I said, okay, fine. A few days later, I'm like, oh, I want to be, you know, cool again. So I steal a cigarette and I go to my sister. I go, I got a cigarette and we can go back in the bed. She's like, what is wrong with you? And I started smoking cigarettes in the bathroom and she fucking told on me. And first of all, she was the one that fucking started it.
It's like she gaslighted you.
I've been gaslit my whole life. Okay.
So but you don't still smoke cigarettes.
No. Ugh. Okay.
I don't either, but my sister still smokes cigarettes.
No, she doesn't. Doesn't that upset you?
I want to write a book about how to quit if you care about your sister.
Is she been smoking the whole time?
Pretty much.
And does she smoke a lot?
She doesn't smoke a lot. And actually, to tell you the truth, I don't know if she smokes now, because I don't know if she did like a pandemic
right
thing or not. But she says her lungs, she gets them checked out and her lungs are fine. Like, my grandmother was 94 when she quit smoking cigarettes. And I'm like, Grandma, why did you quit? And she goes, I had enough.
Elisa's grandmother lived to 96 and was a chain smoker. So
it just depends on who the person is, right? My grandmother is, she was so funny. Wait, I had a story about her, but then I just forgot. No, I forgot it.
Okay. When you were 4, Emily let you come to her birthday party.
Oh my God. I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. And you were so excited that you were with the older girls and you had to pee, but you didn't want to leave and miss out on anything. And you thought your Danskins would hold the pee. So you didn't, you just peed. And then Emily's mother came over. Was Emily Jewish, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
So before we get to Emily's mother, I remember my thought process.
Right.
Red Danskins. And like a red and white striped Danskin shirt. You know, they were like the early Garanimals.
Yeah.
I wish I could wear them now. So I remember thinking, I have to pee. I'm 4 or 3. Right. And I go, the bottom of the pants will hold it in. The pee will stop at the bottom. That was my thought process.
Right.
Because I just didn't want to lose my spot. We were playing Duck Duck Goose.
Right.
So that's when I guess I got up to chase somebody around the circle, and Emily's mother came down and said, did you have an accident? And I said, no, your pipes are leaking.
4 years old. And what did she say?
Said, well, okay, but I think you need to go home and change.
Were you so mortified?
I was soaked.
Right.
So I wasn't mortified because I had convinced myself that I didn't pee, that her pipes were leaking.
Okay. Wishful thinking. Now, did your mother say anything like, Wendela?
No.
Okay. I love that story.
After that, oh, it just sucked. I'm gray.
Wendy's has a gray
comic.
What is it? It's just a stick that covers your gray.
Time, yeah. I have every product. I have the magnetic kind that you put on, but then you get stuck to the refrigerator. But I have like the root touch up.
I have the spray, and I also have. There's a spray. It's like a dry shampoo with color in it. I have the spray, Bumble and Bumble. And I also have, I got a brush that it's like, it looks like a compact and you can do the grays.
I have that one.
Yeah, that's good.
Hey everybody, if you know me, you know I love my liquid IV and I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration, that it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV hydration multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome.
Okay, so you went to, you went to public school, correct? And you were smart. Did you get straight A's all the time?
No, I had some A minuses, but I knew which classes to take. Like, I think being smart is partly figuring out how to get a good grade. Like, I was always the teacher's pet. I wanted to be a class clown, but I was the teacher's pet. So this was like a problem.
So did you ever get through grammar school and middle school? Did you ever get in trouble? Did you ever get suspended? No, you didn't.
I did. I got in trouble. I never got suspended.
I didn't either.
In seventh grade, I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. My art class convinced me to ask the teacher if he was wearing a toupee. Mr. Rob.
Mr. Rob. So the kids said to you,
Ask him.
Ask him if he's wearing a toupee.
And I just wanted them to like me.
Right.
So I asked. We had he had a teacher's assistant named Lisa, and she had 2 earrings.
Which was radical.
It was the weirdest thing I'd ever seen. Two earrings. And she looked like Cher.
Right.
And I asked Mr. Rom if he was wearing a toupee. And he took me outside in the hall.
And he took his head off.
And he took his toupee off.
Yeah, right.
I actually just watched the episode of Cheers where Ted Danson takes
his toupee. Really?
Yes. I didn't realize he did that.
Yeah.
And he said, that wasn't very nice. That would be like if I asked you if you were wearing pasties.
No way.
And so I ripped out my pasties.
But that is fat. Wait, first of all, I have many questions.
Because you didn't know this about
me. Right. Did he wear a toupee?
Still don't know.
Did you do it in front of the whole class?
I did.
So it was like, I have a question. And he thought it was about whatever the
paper mache
assignment was. Right. And you said, are you wearing a toupee? You could have said right there, I meant mache, but you didn't. Okay. And then he brings you outside. And then what do you think if he said, that's like me asking if wearing pasties, if he said that today, would he be fired? Because pasties is tits.
I think he could have had me expelled if it was today.
Really?
Yeah. Or
no way.
Or sent me to the principal. Or I haven't thought about this right. 40 years.
Do you think Mr. Toupee, Ron, whatever his name was, do you think he was gay?
I don't think he was gay, but he was wearing hip huggers with bell bottoms.
Yeah, he's gay.
And I want to find him on social media. One of my seventh grade teachers reached out to me.
No way.
Through another friend and asked me to get his script to Paramount.
No fucking way. Yeah. Don't you hate people that do that?
I guess like I live close to Hollywood.
Right, so right.
They thought maybe I
mean, you're Wendy Liebman. Yeah. Okay, so you didn't have a bat mitzvah, but you went to a lot of bat mitzvahs. Now, in high school, you were in all the school plays, correct? Were you in them in junior high too? Like, were you in the band and the drama, or were you mostly singing and acting?
I don't think there was a band in junior high. I know. And I wasn't in the band senior year, but I was full of irony because on one hand, I was a cheerleader.
Ugh.
But I was an angry cheerleader. I was like, give me an F. I was angry. I was hungry. And I was a cheerleader, but I was also in the drama club. So people couldn't quite
figure you out. Yeah.
Neither could my therapist.
Good night. Did you go to therapy at a young age?
16.
Wow. I went at 18 and I thought that was young. Did you ask your parents if you could go to therapy or did they send you?
No, I asked because I was anorexic.
Right.
So I had this German woman telling me to eat. And she scared the shit out of me. So I did. I started eating.
Okay. Your Jewish parents in Roslyn sent you to a German
well,
Nazi.
Was German, Jew. German Jew.
Oh, all right. Okay. Okay. Wow. So when did you realize you were anorexic? Or that you had an eating thing?
Just like 15, maybe.
Was it a control thing?
The eating?
Yes. It's like people don't understand anorexia, especially now with the body dysmorphia and all this shit that's going on, that it's a fucking disease. It's not like someone saying, eat, you know, you're right. Too skinny or this, and it was like, no one talked about it when you had it.
It was rampant.
In Roslyn?
It's competitive non-eating.
Right.
Is what I think anorexic. I saw an anorexic woman with a sign that said, "Will work." What people don't understand about anorexia, it's not that we don't want to eat. It's that, like, we want to do is eat. So it's right. Really the opposite of obesity. You know, it's an eating disorder. But I haven't suffered that in 50 years or 45 years.
So, God, thank God. Baruch Hashem. But in Roslyn, New York, it was a lot of girls. Did someone say something to you or did you know, oh, this is a problem?
I don't remember how I figured it out, but
right.
I think I was just really fucking hungry.
Right.
And our family went to therapy for something else, like something with my sister. And then I asked if I could go by myself. So I think that's how it happened.
So the four of you went, so you had already gone to family therapy. Don't you love, my family was into therapy too. Like both my parents went, I mean, I was an adult, but I was the first to ask to go. And it was not shunned, but it was something, you know, now everyone goes to therapy and everyone talks about therapy. But when I remember when I was 18, I remember saying to my friends, you know, I go to therapy. And it was like a thing, like I'm a secret I'm letting you in on.
Exactly.
Right. People don't realize how much the world has changed. So you went to therapy. Do you remember the German woman's name?
Eva Eben. From Great Neck South.
Was she a Holocaust survivor?
Probably, but you know, she was the kind of therapist who you would say, are you a Holocaust survivor? And she would say, "Why do you really want to know if I'm a Holocaust survivor, or do you want to talk about why you want to know?" She was
that. Oh, God. Yeah. Very analytical.
Right. So I knew not to.
Right. Boundaries. Right. So she really helped you. Did you have friends who were anorexic too that you... Like, did you talk to your friends about it? Or
we had non-eating buddies.
Really?
No, but my best friends, one of my closest friends was bulimic, but I didn't know about that for many years. But so that's a different kind of eating disorder.
Right.
You can hide more.
Right.
Everybody had some issue in Roslyn.
Well, it's the suburbs. You have to, you know, there's... You have to, or life is boring. Now, when Karen Carpenter died, was that a huge...
Well, I wanted to be Karen Carpenter. I wanted to be Lorraine Newman on Saturday
Right.
Night Live. And now we're friends, which is so
funny. Oh my God, I fucking love her so much. And I love Hannah.
Hannah's doing my show at Locally Grown.
I know. The one you asked me to do, but I didn't know. I don't think I'm going to be in town. But I'm coming. I'm doing that fucking show.
Please, locally.
Okay.
Okay. But yes, so I wanted to be Karen Carpenter. I wanted to be Lorraine Newman.
Right.
Skinny in my leotard. And everybody in my class, we were all into dance. Like, we all had leotards and we took dance at Temple Beth Shalom.
But did you have, and you had a lot of friends?
I had my best friend. And then, like,
a
group of other friends.
So you're in high school, you're academically great, you're in the drama club, and you're a cheerleader, which to me would mean you have no fucking problems. Like, that's, you know, would be a dream come true. I am 6'2", 6'3", getting called Bigfoot and Sasquatch every time I walk down the fucking hall, and I'm in the band. And I don't play basketball, huh?
I think about you all the time in high school.
It was hell. And yet you see that the people you think are doing perfect are also having a fucking hard time. But mine was so obvious and out in the open. I think it was probably maybe easier to suffer not in silence. You know, I don't know, but whatever. It was humiliating, which is why I'm in show business and nothing's humiliating. I mean, I do get PTSD, like on red carpets when they're like, oh, I'm sorry, your name. Or I talked about this a few weeks ago with someone where whenever you do like step and repeat and you know, it's like, oh, can you move? And, you know, it's just like, it's so fucking pushes my buttons when they, you know, they're like, I knew you're here for, and you're the publicist for, and you're like, oh, fuck you.
Well, I hosted a show once for a benefit. This is the third time I hosted this big benefit in LA. And they basically told me to get out of the way on the red carpet. I'm like, fuck this shit. Like,
no way.
Yeah. So it's like we do so many things for free. You
right.
Know what I? At least respect me. Like,
right.
And you realize how disposable you are.
Right.
So if anything, it made me stand up for myself.
But you know what? It's like my manager told me to stop doing benefits, you know? And I feel like it's my... Jewish, you know, we're supposed to give back. So I still do them, but I'm not doing one out for free. And my therapist called me Mother Teresa a couple of weeks ago. So I was like, all right, I'm done. So you go through high school. Were you in the National Honor Society?
I won an award for writing. And I also won the class award for creativity, which was just somebody's family set up this chunk of money because their son passed away. And so they wanted to give like a prize to each graduating class in his honor. His name is Arbo, was the last name. And I won the creativity award. So I know, it was like $100.
That's so great. God, your parents must be so proud of Wendela.
Except I didn't call my dad on Father's Day.
Oh, shut the fuck up. Okay, so I didn't call my father on Father's Day either. Good night, folks. So.
Hey, everyone. I love our sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. I don't know if you've noticed when we show the clips of the podcast that I have a new best friend in my office named Avi. And where did I get Avi? At Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States of America. And I am a happy customer. I love walking in this room and seeing my fig tree, Avi. I talk to Avi. I love it. It makes me happy. And you need plant life in your house. And I have another plant on my piano in the other room. I'm just telling you, it makes your home so much more of a home. So thank you to Fast Growing Trees. They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees. They have palm trees. They have evergreens. They have houseplants and so much more. And I'm in an apartment in New York. Okay? I don't even have a yard outside. And it's changed my life. Do it. Go to Fast Growing Trees. And whatever you're interested in, they have it. They have the perfect fit for your climate, for your space. You can call them and ask them how to take care of your plants. They have so much information. And it's so easy to order online. Your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. They have free plant consultation forever. Forever. And I have a new best friend, Avi. I love you, Avi. So do it. You don't need a yard. You don't need a lot of space. You just need to make your home a beautiful place. And that's where Fast Growing Trees comes in. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Do it. You're welcome.
You then graduated and went to Wellesley. Now, did you apply to other schools? Why did you pick Wellesley? And why are you so fucking smart? Go ahead.
I wanted to go to Wesleyan.
Really?
I didn't get in.
What?
I got into Binghamton, Connecticut College. And I was waitlisted at Brown. And I'm still waiting. I went to Wellesley. It was the best school I got into. My mother went there. And that's why I got in. And
it is not.
And I took my second year and I went to Wesleyan on exchange. So I got to go there. And then I realized Wellesley was a better school for me. And I was planning on going back anyway because it was only a year. But anyway, then I went back and I majored in psychology.
Yes, I know that.
And I don't know if you know what my thesis was about. It was about body image and shyness.
Wow. Did you consider yourself shy?
A little bit. And yeah.
Though you played Viola in Twelfth Night, Dorothy in Wizard of Oz, Eliza in My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
You did a thesis on body image and shy. Did you consider yourself to be shy?
There was something wrong with me. Like I had a lot of extra energy and yet I was nervous to talk. So yeah, right. I guess I was shy. But that started when I was 11. That's when like women's body or my body started to change.
Right.
So that's when like the shit hit the fan. But before that, I was the actress.
I can't say.
So do you see me in green?
Yeah.
I was playing a Jewish mother.
A Yenta. You played a Yenta. I have that written down.
And that was our basement.
Yeah.
Jew. I got the biggest laughs. I remember doing it. I was like, what did you have for dinner?
And you remember getting a laugh. Oh my God. Hilarious. Will you send me these?
Yeah. That's the first time I got a laugh. I tried to get a laugh. I remember putting my socks on.
That was 11?
That was six. Oh. I was six.
Six.
And I just remember thinking, if I put my socks on so they're not symmetrical, that will be hilarious. Because really, there's nothing funnier than crooked socks or crooked glasses.
Right.
Right? Okay. I'm a prop comic.
So you write this thesis. Did they do anything with it? Or did they say, wow, this is fucking brilliant?
So I did it with a professor and it got quoted in other literature about
blindness.
But I want to tell you what I did, like how I did it. Like I studied exhibitionism, like I made this scale of things you would do. Like, would you streak or some, I don't remember what the questions were. But I also, part of the study was I went to Harvard because Harvard and Wellesley are like 15 miles away and Wellesley's all women. And so I found this group of students, guys, who would rate women on their picture on scale of attractiveness. And then I would.
Was one of them Trump? Oh, because he didn't go to Harvard. All right. Yeah, go ahead.
I cross-referenced with how the women felt about themselves in terms of shyness. And what I found was the women who were less shy were deemed more attractive.
Oh, really? I would think it would be the opposite.
Right. No, it was that if you had confidence.
The men, that's because they went to Harvard. If you went to fucking community college, they would be like.
But then I heard Mark Zuckerberg, that's how he started Facebook. He had women. Or men rating women. That's how he started Facebook. So I think somehow I started Facebook.
You started Facebook along with those fucking twins and you should get some money. Wow, that is fascinating because this whole idea of not being shy and being shy and not, like, because my sister is shy and she told me I hate shy people when I years ago. And I don't hate shy people, but I have had to endure so much, you know, humiliation and belittling that I wanted to take control. Like it got to the point where I was like, nothing you say to me, like I have nothing to lose. I have nothing to lose. I've heard it all. So I think sometimes I have an air of confidence. I think a lot of times people think, and people will say, oh my God, you scared me when, and I was like, and I'm so not that, like, I'm not a scare. I'm like inside, I'm a mush ball, you know?
I know.
But it's interesting that the guys would think the women who were more confident were attractive because, you know, ladylike means not having an opinion. So, no,
but they're presenting themselves like maybe if you're confident, you're sitting up straighter.
Right.
If you're not shy, you're like not yourself. You're out there. And so maybe that comes off as more attractive.
Okay.
I didn't say the findings were repeated. I didn't
say
that my study was any good.
Right. So after college, you moved into a house with these PhD and MDs at Harvard, right? And they were brilliant. And you were working at Harvard in the doing research in the clinical psychology department, right? Okay. Or in clinical psychology. And you would play Trivial Pursuit with them. And they were really fucking smart, right? And you were like, fuck. And it was your humor. That's when you realized, I'm funny. I can be funny and get out of this. A feeling of feeling like shit or dumb.
It was my MO, Judy. Like, yeah. I was clinically depressed. And on top of that, I was around all these brainiacs. And I just felt so less than. And so the way I brought myself up was I could make everybody laugh.
Right.
And that was like, then I could catch my breath. Because I was so, you know what it's like to be clinically depressed. I would just cry all the time.
I couldn't even leave the house. Yeah, you can't do anything. You can't. I remember the time went by so slowly. You know, I would look at that clock and the seconds would, it was horrible. Yeah, it's a horrible, and it's chemical. It's not like, you know what I mean? Like I've said this before on the show, like my blood levels were completely different than when I wasn't depressed. You know,
I was always functioning. Like I always went to work.
Yeah. I couldn't go to work.
And I would just cry at work.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah. At the kids' games. And I was just sitting there crying. It's awful. It's so fucking awful. Okay.
It's not in our control.
Right.
And then I got medicated. And, but yes, my MO for that time was making people laugh. And then I realized, okay, so should I skip ahead and tell you how I got into comedy?
Well, I know how you got into comedy. You were working as a secretary and you got the wrong mail, something. You picked up the wrong mail for a different office. And there was a brochure for continuing education or something at Harvard. Secretary during the day. And at Radcliffe, you were working and you got the wrong mail. And there was a class about how to become a stand-up comedian. Was it Ron Lynch who taught it?
Ron Lynch, yes. And if you don't know who Ron Lynch is, he still does stand-up. He's been on the Sarah Silverman program. He's in movies. He's hilarious.
He's hilarious. And you said, I'm going to take this class.
Judy, this is really how it happened. I lived in an apartment. I took the wrong mail in from the apartment downstairs. Okay. I saw a class on acting and I was like, okay, I'm going to take that. So I took the acting class and the teacher quit at the break. And so the school said, take another class. So I don't know why I didn't see this one at first, but I see how to be a stand-up comedian. And I swear to God, it was like angels were singing.
Right.
Like, right. And I fucking knew that I wanted to do that. And even though I sucked so bad, I just knew that that was what I should be doing.
And you took this class. Did you know, did Ron, I mean, because as, you know, I'm sure everyone knows Wendy's delivery and the fact that her jokes are perfection. And the use of the English language is beyond.com. Did he know? Because you know it takes, if you don't know this from listening to my podcast, that it takes like 15 years to even know what the fuck you're doing up there. Did he know, this girl's an original. This woman has some sort of, you know, special delivery. It's not like everyone else, you know. Did he recognize that?
Well, I don't think I knew that I had that style for
years,
but we became best friends and he was like my mother and I spent all my time with him and he would take me to gigs. And I remember going to a gig with him, not me performing. He was performing with his then partner, Bob, who was a team, Bob and Ron and Bob. And we went to a college and some girls came up to them afterwards and it was Janine Garofalo.
Oh my God.
A student. She was
also a student?
No, she was a student at the college.
Okay.
But I think that was, I don't know if that was right before she started doing stand-up. But Ron was just so good to me.
But it's so funny because you were the teacher's pet. again.
And I just wanted to be the fucking class clown.
Right. And yeah.
You're right. So, I was the teacher's.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You should be a therapist.
Thank you. So, and you were going to be a therapist, but you decided no.
I would rather make 100 people laugh than one person cry.
Right. I love that line. Okay. So you start doing stand-up. Now, a lot of people, we should explain, there are two places if you want to be a great fucking stand-up, especially in the 80s, it was Boston and New York. And there were Boston comics and there were New York comics. And if you did both, you were fucking so strong. Because it's interesting that the New York and Boston audiences don't take any shit. They know when you're full of shit. They are the hardest audiences. But I remember when you started, you know, it was like Tony V and Steve Sweeney and Linda Smith, Laura Keitlinger. Like there were all these.
Dennis Leary.
I heard you did a gig
with him.
Yeah, you did a gig with him. You opened for him. There were like 8 people and he killed.
How do you know all this about me?
I do like major research.
Oh my God.
I know.
That?
It was in some kind of weird place, right? And there were like 8 people.
Yeah, it was 141 Elm Street.
Yeah.
In Northampton.
Yeah, in Northampton, Massachusetts. That's right.
And for me, it was the Nightmare on Elm Street, but he was getting laughs. Yeah, he killed it.
And did these guys tell you you were funny?
Barry Crimmins did.
Yeah.
And Brian Kiley did.
Yeah.
People were so nice. Like the comedians, I really think it was a nice fraternity.
You know, I felt that because even though I was in New York and I started going to the clubs in like 82 because I was in college, but I remember being so jealous of the Boston comics who honed their craft in Boston and then came to New York. Instead of being in New York, it wasn't as nice, you know, it wasn't as fraternal in a way because there were more and it was just fiercely competitive and people were coming from all, you know, and I would drive to, like, we were coming to Boston to work. Because at Kowloon's or Nick's, right?
Comedy Connection,
Catch a Rising Star.
Made Again Sam's.
Yep. I mean. But
I only went to New York once because I still had a day job. And I remember performing at Eddie Brill's room, The Paper Moon.
Oh, yeah, The Paper Moon.
And Jimmy Tingle was there. And Maxine Lapidus was there that night. And I remember I performed and Jimmy Tingle said to me, you're a great performer, but you need more material. And I could still say that about myself today. Where's the material, lady?
You were doing really well in Boston. And I've told this story before because we're both in that movie Hysterical, that you came to Catch a Rising Star to do a set. I think you might have been doing Letterman. I don't know, but you came there. It was late 80s. It was like 88, maybe. I don't even know. 89. And I remember Lewis saying, and I had been hanging out there since I was 19, sitting at that fucking bar. And I remember Lewis saying, Gold, come in and watch her. This is funny. This is funny, Gold. You want to be like her. And I'm like, we're so opposite. Oh. And yet I remember watching you up there and it was like, it was so original.
Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with my friend. I fucking love this woman, Wendy Liebman. Thank you, Wendy, for being on the show. I fucking love her. How much do you love Wendy Liebman? Seriously. There's nothing not to love. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling. This podcast and my life would not be possible without the help of Brittany Joe Sowards. If you have not subscribed to the show, you're mentally ill and you need to do that. You need to leave a 5-star review. You need to buy my book. Yes, I can say that. When They Come for the Comedians, We're All in Trouble. There's a lot of stuff you need to do if you listen to this podcast. Go to judygold.com. You will find everything I'm doing and thinking and writing about. You can also find links to my book. You can get the audiobook, which is fucking fantastic. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram for all my upcoming virtual and live events and all dates at Judy Gold, JewDyGold, because you know I'm a Jew. I don't know if I mentioned that. But really, thank you, thank you, thank you. I've been doing this podcast for 6 years. It is a labor of love because, believe me, I make no money. And I just thank you so much for listening, because it's really, I love hearing people's stories. It's really, I feel like other people's stories help people in so many ways, and I just love doing it. So I thank you so much for listening. Please, if you haven't had a vaccine, you are mentally ill and you need to get a fucking vaccine, okay? It's ridiculous. Just get a fucking vaccine so we can eradicate this goddamn fucking virus. Also, stop taking everything so personally. It's not about you. Please support live stand-up comedy. Tell all your friends about my podcast, because, you know, I need some positive reinforcement. You know, I'm very needy. And thank you again so much for listening. If you're on the Cape or near the Cape, I am in Provincetown performing all summer long. So come see me. And thank you. Thank you all so much. And as we always say, so long.
Don't forget to tune in next week to Just Kill Me Now.
Let's just kill me.
Oh. Don't forget to turn for part two on Just Kill Me.
No, it's not. It's just
Kill Me.
Now.
No, Judy Gold's Just Kill Me.
Kill Me Now.
Just Kill Me Now.